turn to the book of Matthew, chapter 14. We've been looking at the miracles of Christ and started off looking at his miracles over nature. And last couple of weeks, we've been looking at the miracle of Jesus Christ walking on the sea. And then, of course, it's a twofold miracle because Peter also walked on the sea. And there's many applications. We'll read Matthew's account. Mark and John also give account of this event and the life of Christ, but Matthew gives the more full account. But in Matthew 14, we'll begin reading with verse 22. And straightway, or immediately, Jesus constrained his disciples to get into a ship. Again, that followed the miracle of feeding well over 5,000 people, and they were to go before him unto the other side. And in the meantime, he would be sending the multitudes away. And when he had sent the multitudes away, he went up into a mountain apart to pray. And the evening was come. So he was there about the first watch. That's important because he came to the disciples in the fourth watch. So we get some idea of time frame, and we talked about that last week. But the ship was now in the midst of the sea, tossed with waves, for the wind was contrary. And in the fourth watch, sometime between 3 a.m. and 6 a.m. of the night, Jesus went unto them, walking on the sea. And when the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were troubled. And the reason they were troubled is they supposed something that wasn't so. It is a spirit, and they cried out for fear. But straightway Jesus spake unto them, saying, Be of good cheer, it is I, be not afraid. And Peter answered him and said, Lord, if it be thou, bid me come unto thee on the water. And he said, Come. When Peter was come down out of the ship, he walked on the water to go to Jesus. But when he saw the wind boisterous, he was afraid. And beginning to sink, he cried, saying, Lord, save me. And immediately Jesus stretched forth his hand and caught him, and said unto him, O thou of little faith, wherefore didst thou doubt? When they were come into the ship, the wind ceased. And they that were in the ship came and worshipped him, saying, Of a truth, thou art the Son of God. We've seen so far, by just way of quick review, that this storm, of course, is a picture of the trials of God's people. The first thing we notice about this storm was it was a very great storm. It was a very great wind. So it was something that was extraordinary. It was not an ordinary storm. And sometimes our trials can be extraordinary. We see also that it was a storm that caused everything to appear to be out of control. And as far as the apostles were concerned, everything was out of control. But you and I need to always realize that that's only an appearance, because the Lord always has things in control. We see also that the storm was working against them. We read the wind was contrary. So everything appeared to be working against them. But that's never so, as a child of God. All things work together for our good, but it appeared that everything was working against them. We see that when the storm arose, they were in the midst of the sea, about three and a half miles out. So they had no place to go. They couldn't turn around. They just had no place to go. And many times the Lord, of course, brings us to that position where we have no place to go but him. And that's not a bad place to be. That's a good place to be. We see also that it was a time of darkness and it was a time of loneliness. Jesus, again, went to the mountain in the first watch, didn't come to them until the fourth watch, and it was dark, and they were beginning to get lonely, and no doubt they began to wonder, where's the Lord? He sent us before him. Where is he? And so it was a time of darkness and loneliness, and sometimes we have to experience the darkness, and sometimes we have to experience some loneliness. And that's part of the trial. We see also they added to their trial for two reasons. One, they did not recognize the Lord when he was walking toward them. They knew they were in a storm. They could feel the reality of the storm. They could feel the reality of the wind. They could feel the reality of the waves. And there's Jesus, the most real thing there was in the storm, and they didn't recognize him. And that adds to our troubles when we do not recognize the Lord. But then they did something else. They made a supposition. Jesus is walking toward them, and they immediately supposed that it was a ghost. And their supposition added to their fear, and many times that's our tendency. That's our tendency as human beings to suppose some things. And many times our suppositions become facts in our minds. And these suppositions can be very, very far from the truth. And these suppositions can add to our fear. So we see this was something that they did. And this, of course, caused them great trouble of heart. When we left off last week, we see Jesus is walking toward them. He's walking on the very storm, the very waters that was tossing their ship back and forth, and showing the Lord's complete dominion over those waters. As far as the apostles were concerned, they were out of control. But there's the Lord walking on the very thing that they thought threatened their lives, showing that he had complete dominion over these things. And that's always the case, and we need to always by faith see the Lord walking on our storm. Even if we can't walk on the storm, which Peter eventually did, we need to see the Lord walking on the storm. So Jesus is coming toward them in verse 25, and in the fourth watch of the night Jesus went unto them walking on the sea. And then in verse 27, also in Mark 6 and verse 50, we see Jesus immediately said something to them. Again, they supposed that it was a ghost, but all he had to do was speak. And God's sheep know his voice, and they knew that it was Christ. All they had to hear was that voice, and we need to always be listening. We need to always be listening for that voice in the midst of the storm. And he came with a message. And the words that Christ spoke to them were very thoughtful words. They were very caring words. He could have immediately rebuked them. That's not what he did. They were words that were very sympathetic. They were words that were kind. They were words that were compassionate, but more important than that, they were much needed words. He spoke the words that they needed to hear, and the Lord always does that. He always speaks what we need to hear. So he came in their time of distress and need, and he came with a message. He came with a message that was suited for their circumstances. He came with a message that was suited for their needs. So we want to look at the message of Christ in verse 27. Jesus spake unto them, saying, "Be of good cheer, it is I, be not afraid." Very simple message. It was a message of courage. He said, "Be of good cheer." Jesus spoke those words to several people. You know, people today think that what Jesus is saying there is be happy. That's not what he's saying. That's not what he's saying at all. He says, be of good cheer. Remember, he said that in Matthew 9 and verse 2 to the man who was sick of the palsy. In other words, he was a paralytic. Jesus said, be of good cheer. To the apostles who were struggling with the news of the Lord's approaching departure, there in John 14, 15, and 16, Jesus had told them that he was going away and that they were going to face some antagonism and they were going to face some opposition in the world. And he reminded them of their own weakness, but he said, be of good cheer. Be of good cheer. That was the message that was brought to Paul when Paul was being threatened there in Acts 23 and verse 11. But you look at each time that Jesus spoke those words, and Jesus is saying much more than be happy. What he's saying is be courageous. Be courageous. Be brave. Be strong. And in the very midst of trouble, in the very midst of perplexities, in the very midst of anxieties and temptations and problems and difficulties and trials and infirmities and struggles and needs and fears, in the very midst of all those things, Jesus comes and he says, be of good cheer. And that conveys the idea of, he's not just speaking of something outward. This conveys the idea of an inward strength. An inward strength. An inward firmness. And when Jesus says, be of good cheer, he is saying, be strong inwardly. Why? Because Jesus has dominion over the waters. He's walking on the sea. There was no need for them to be afraid. So he's saying, be of good courage. It was also a message of confidence, which, of course, goes along with courage. If you have courage, you will have confidence. Our courage ought to be in the Lord. Therefore, our confidence is in the Lord as well. And it was a message of confidence. He went on to say, be not afraid. Be not afraid. Fear is, again, they were fearful at this time because of the storm, but then they added to their fear because of their supposition. But fear is a state of terror. It is a state of alarm. Panic is a result of fear. So this state of terror, this state of alarm causes panic. And no doubt the apostles were in a state of panic. This fear, this state of terror or alarm causes distress. It causes some anxiety. These things are the result of fear. It can even cause some dread and some worry. And they were worried. They were worried about the one who was coming toward them because they didn't know who it was at first. Fear is very real. It's something that we all deal with. Sometimes our fear can be justified, and other times it isn't. But fear is very real, very real, but it's also very debilitating. Fear will cloud the mind. Fear will cloud your mind, making it difficult to think rationally. I mean, most fears, if people would think rationally about it, the fear wouldn't even be there. Most fears. But fear robs us of our ability to think rationally. Of course, it robs us of joy. It robs us of peace. It robs us from assurance. From Matthew 8 and verse 26, we see that fear really stems from a lack of faith. It's a result of our unbelief. So fear can be overcome. If fear is a result of faith, then fear can be overcome by having faith. We overcome fear when we get a firm grip upon the fact that God is in control. That overcomes fear. More importantly, perhaps, when that gets a hold of us, that God is in control, then fear is overcome. When we get a hold of the fact, or the fact gets a hold of us, that He's God. And He possesses all power. But because of our proneness to fear, and we are prone to fear, and because of the serious consequences of fear, Jesus came with the message, fear not, be not afraid. And that message, of course, is seen throughout the Word of God. It was also a message of power. He said, be of good cheer, be not afraid. In the middle of those two statements is the most important statement of all, which serves as a reason to be courageous and serves as a reason not to be afraid. It is I. Be of good cheer. It is I. Be not afraid. It is I. So this is the foundation, the message that Christ brought. It was a message of power. It is I. That is an emphatic personal pronoun, the very same when Jesus said, I am. So he's saying, it is I. There he is on the storm-tossed waters. And he says, it is I. The very one that you've seen perform miracles. It is I. It is I, the infinite one. The eternal one, the omnipotent one. It is I, the all-knowing one. It is I, the owner of all. As soon as he said, it is I, Peter recognized that voice. He said, if it be thee, Lord, bid me to come unto thee. So in the midst of the storm, in the midst of all the upheaval, in the midst of all the instability, in the midst of all the uncertainty, there is Jesus. He's standing on the storm-tossed waters. He's not going back and forth. He's standing firm because he has complete dominion over that storm. He's not affected by the waves. He's not affected by the winds. The very waves and winds that was tossing their ship about had no effect upon Christ. And whatever your trial is, it has no effect upon God. He's God. And he has absolute dominion. So in the midst of all the instability, in the midst of all the uncertainty, there he is. He says, it is I. It is I. Words that would bring relief. And if you and I would listen, if we would listen for his voice in the storm, we would find relief. There's a lot of voices in the time of storm. But if we would listen for that one voice, it is I. It is I. We would find relief. We would find reassurance. We would find consolation. And these words were spoken as the reason for them, again, to be courageous. The reason for them not to be afraid. Sometime get a concordance. Look up the phrase, fear not, or be not afraid. Look up those phrases. And you'll see that almost every time, and we're going to look at a few, but almost every time the Lord says, fear not, he gives a reason for them not to fear. And the reason is always himself. Always. It's always himself. Notice in the book of Genesis, book of Genesis, chapter 15, and we'll read verse 1. Again, there's many, many times in the Bible we read this phrase. We just want to look at a few. About halfway down, he says, fear not, Abram. Then notice the very next word, I. I. That's the reason not to fear. Something about God. He says, fear not, Abram. I am thy shield. I am thy shield and thy exceeding great reward. Genesis 21. Verse 17. Genesis 21, verse 17. And God heard the voice of the lad, and the angel of God called to Hagar out of heaven and said unto her, what aileth thee, Hagar? Fear not for God. Fear not for God. It's not the way many people put it today. Someone loses their job and they say, fear not, there's another job out there. That's not it. Fear not for God. I've got news for you. There may not be another job out there. But fear not for God. That's always so. That's always so. Then notice Genesis 26, verse 24. Genesis 26, verse 24. You know, people will tell other people, fear not, it's going to get better. Yeah, it's going to get better in eternity. It may not get better in this life. Be careful what you say to people. But you can always say, fear not, for God. You can always say that. Genesis 26, verse 24. And the Lord appeared unto him the same night and said, I am the God of Abraham thy father, fear not. Now he gives a reason beforehand, I am the God of Abraham thy father, fear not. Then he gives a reason afterwards, for I am with thee, and will bless thee and multiply thy seed for thy servant Abraham's sake. Genesis 42 and verse 23. Genesis 42, verse 23. They knew not that Joseph. That's not the word. Let's go to Exodus chapter 20. Book of Exodus chapter 20, verse 20. And Moses said unto the people, fear not for God. Fear not, for God is come to prove you, that this fear may be before your faces, that ye sin, that his fear may be before your faces, that ye sin not. Deuteronomy chapter 31. Deuteronomy 31, verse 6. Be strong and of good courage. Fear not, nor be afraid of them. For the Lord thy God, he it is that doth go with you. He will not fail thee, nor forsake thee. In verse 8, And the Lord, he it is that doth go before thee. He will be with thee. He will not fail thee, neither forsake thee. Fear not, neither be dismayed. He gives the reasons beforehand. But again, my point is, when God says fear not, he always gives the reason, and the reason is always himself. And that is our reason not to fear. And that night, or that early morning, Jesus began to make his approach toward that storm-tossed boat, and the disciples were filled with fear. He says, it is I. Because it is I, you can be inwardly strong. Because it is I, there's no need to be afraid. Notice in the book of Isaiah, the book of Isaiah, chapter 35. Book of Isaiah 35, verse 4. Say to them that are of a fearful heart, be strong, fear not. But don't just say it to them, give them a reason. And don't give them a human reason. Give them a God reason. Behold your God. Fear not, be strong. Behold your God. That's the cure. That's the cure for fear. Isaiah 41, verse 13. For I, the Lord thy God, will hold thy right hand, saying unto thee, that is, as he's holding our hand, saying unto thee, fear not, I will help thee. Again, he gives a reason, and the reason is found in himself. Verse 14, fear not, thou worm Jacob, and ye men of Israel, I will help thee, saith the Lord. And you get the idea, and you see that all through the Old Testament. You see it in a few places in the New Testament. So here they are in a storm. You and I can be in storms, perhaps you are in one. But what you need to do is get your mind and your eyes off of the wind, get your mind and eyes off of the waves, get your mind and eyes off of the ship, get your mind and eyes off all the people that may be around you, and listen for that voice. It is I. Do not make suppositions. Trust that one who comes says, it is I. And if we listen, we listen carefully, we'll hear that voice. We'll hear him say, "It is I. Be not afraid. Be of good cheer." Let's look to the Lord. Word of prayer. Heavenly Father,